This is Vectis Radio.
For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and not one but two special guests, Helen Redding. Welcome, Helen. And hi. Donna Jones.
Now, hi.
Helen is founder and director of the Red Tide Theatre Company. You've got a whole list of things behind you. Producer, promoter, writer, advisor, mother, teacher. What a woman. Fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So lots to hear from you. And Donna, as our regular listeners will know, is a poet, Donna Jones, MBE. So welcome back, Donna.
Thank you.
And I don't know about you, but I'm feeling very Christmassy. We've got Marco here decking the halls, or decking the studio, with boughs of holly, putting up with trees. It's all looking very, very festive. And I know we're allowed to do this, aren't we, because it's December.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Some people have been doing it in November.
That's true, yeah. But I think we're officially allowed to start now.
Is that true?
Yeah, without people getting too bar humbug about it.
Okay.
I'm wearing a Christmas jumper as well, and I think that ought to be noted.
It's really lovely. Yes, I can see that. That's beautiful. Show me not on telly. No, it's lovely, and I think if you can, you know, we've had a bit of a rough old year, haven't we, what with one thing and another. It's not been the best year, has it, 2016?
No, not at all.
So I think, you know, come December, if we can just put a few fairy lights around things and brighten it up and spread a little Christmas cheer and do someone some good, why not?
Why not?
Why not? So, let's, Donna, put us in the Christmas mood. Bring some Christmas sparkle with one of your lovely poems, because this is a specially commissioned one, isn't it, for Vectis Radio that you've done?
It is, and I don't normally do poems that rhyme, so it set me quite a challenge. So this one's called Daft Christmas. Because I think there are times when we have to look at it and see the funny side of Christmas, as opposed to all the rushing around and stress that it creates. Santa is a coming soon. I want, I want, I want. I want that and that and that. I want a hat, a bat, a cat, a rat in white called Spike, a bike, a kite, karaoke and Mike, a boat, a coat in bright green, and commando goggles to be seen. Don't be mean, Santa, I don't want much. I don't want a crutch, a rabbit hutch, or a rhinoceros to touch, or such things with wings. I want a shih tzu that doesn't poo, a pool bear with purple hair, a pair of magic moon boots, an astronaut suit to swing on a star, ride planets wide and far. I want to meet the Queen, be invisible and not be seen, climb Jack's magic beanstalk and talk to the animals. I want to walk, sing and dance, to prance like Santa's reindeer, wear trendy gear, drink plenty of beer. Well, I am 82 next year.
Love that. Oh, just love that. Good. That's fantastic. And you've got a second one, haven't you? Another one that you did specially for Vectis. Thank you.
I did, and I lost it on the computer.
Oh, well done.
So I've managed to remember some of the lines.
Thank you. No, I'm sure it'd be fantastic. So this one's Santa, can you help me?
It is. Santa, can you help me, please? I'm really on my knees. There's only 4 weeks left. I'm feeling rather bereft. From a size 20 to an 8, I need to lose this wobbly weight. I've got that slinky black dress, but I'm feeling such a mess. I could wear that shapeless tent to kiss that drunken gent. I've tried the Atkins, the fruit and the Mars to wear my sexy lace bras. From blonde to black, ooh, to wear Santa's red hat. They make such a din, these bristles on my chin. They could pluck a harp, they're that darn sharp. Could I have a facelift now to smooth that crease-lined brow? There's veins on my legs like double poached eggs. Botox and filler are too expensive for me. Ooh, I've suddenly developed a lopsided knee. It's getting dark and very cold. I'm really not that bold to swing it long and late. I haven't got that date. I could stay in for tea and simply be me. Watch TV for fun, eat a cherry-topped bun. Ooh, Coronation Street, a treat. EastEnders at 7. Now I'm truly in heaven.
Lovely. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Donna. They were brilliant. And a Merry Christmas to you.
And you too.
So, Helen, tell me more about Red Tide Theatre, because you're the founder director. So it's quite an undertaking, I would imagine. Not for the faint-hearted.
No, definitely not. And when I started, I had no idea what direction it was going to go in at all. I just knew that there was a gap there, and it really started off from the Key Arts. They wanted a youth theatre in the building, and they were looking for somebody to run it, so I ended up doing it, and it's just grown from there, really. So it's, I started off with, I think, something like 14 teenagers in one group, and then within 2 years I had 70 at one time in two groups. So I had about 40 in the older group and about 30 in the younger group. So it just grew.
Is the emphasis still on it being for youth, for the younger people?
It is, essentially. I think it's turned around again to become more of that, because the reason it was called Red Tie was the TIE stands for Theatre in Education, and I thought that's where the gap in the market was, going into schools and teaching through drama. But that didn't happen. That I do a lot of that now. It's probably the main thing that I do. But when I started 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. And people just kept sending me plays, and some were awful. And in fact, most were awful. And then we found this one play that I just needed to do, and it was an adult play, a three-hander, and it went in that direction for quite a long time. That most of the productions we were doing were adult ones, with the youth theatre doing once a year stuff. But as the kids got older, they've sort of integrated into the adult stuff. So the last play we did, for example, I had two students that I used to teach now are adults, and they're in the play with me. So it's sort of gone full circle, really.
That must be lovely to see them come up through the ranks and make that progression.
Absolutely. I mean, I get so proud. I mean, a lot of the kids come along, they don't come to Red Tie necessarily because they want to be actors. Some come for confidence building, and then find that they like acting and they carry on. Some become because, you know, they want to be performers. Some come just to have, you know, be sociable and have a bit of fun. But we're getting more and more now going on to drama schools and university degrees in drama-related subjects. I do feel really, really proud of them, and I love it. And we had one of our ex-students, Bill Holland, recently, you know, he's qualified from drama school, brought his group back to perform on the island as well, and I think that's a lovely thing to have. You know, they come back as professionals and perform.
Oh, how wonderful.
Here. So it's really nice.
Kind of came full circle.
Yeah, that's really sort of a really proud moment when that happens.
Yes, yes. And what about the kind of, so that was quite a big, massive, you know, that was, I suppose, what you dream of when you teach somebody drama, to see that progression and coming through, and then you sitting in the audience and watching them.
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah,
how good
fantastic.
Is that?
Yeah.
But on a smaller scale, what about those day-to-day moments where you just think, oh, wow, thank goodness I came into work today, because this has just made my day.
Yeah, well, I find, because I teach 2 days a week as well at Priory School, and I get those moments there, you know, teaching drama there, and on a Sunday when I'm teaching my Red Tie students. We've had all sorts of things happen where somebody who wasn't that interested, suddenly you touch on a subject which means something to them, and suddenly they perform something and you suddenly realise, oh my gosh, this person, this is what they've been looking for. And that moment of them understanding what it's like to be, you know, to interpret their feelings, I suppose, into, you know, performance, that can be really moving. And I think because of the nature of the subject as well, in terms of a teaching point of view, you're seen slightly differently from other teachers who teach in the, you know, classroom base. Yeah. And so people do tend to be more open with you. And, you know, I've had young people come out at a Red Tie session, okay, which has been because they know they've got the support and able to do that. I've had young people admit to all sorts of things that they're not happy with, or, you know, feelings that they have that need addressing, and simply because the drama has allowed them to free up and do that.
That's
so it's a really positive thing.
That's almost like a counselling in some sense.
It can be like that.
Be,
I mean, you have to be very careful, obviously,
not because to cross that line. Yeah.
Cross that line, but you know, things, you know, it does seem to be one of those subjects that if people, you know, once the kids allow themselves to get involved in it, that they can express themselves for, you know, the good and the bad things.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, it's very rewarding.
Have you had any of those Billy Elliot moments in so far as the parents? Perhaps one of the parents hasn't been that keen on their child following a drama route?
You get it a lot in schools. There's such an emphasis now on the core subjects, as they call them, and there's so little funding for the arts in a lot of schools, that, you know, well, there's no point in you doing drama GCSE. Where's that going to get you? And it does frustrate me a little bit. My husband, you know, used to run a very large company, and he said about people being employable, that you look at people who have performed and have done that. You know their team skills are going to be good. You know that their communication is going to be good. You know that Absolutely. Their presentation skills are going to be good. And, you know, all these things add up to it. And also, you know, it's, I think... we put so much emphasis on what we call the core academic subjects that I think we forget that our children are artists and dancers and should be able to express themselves in all those so many different ways, and it makes them a full-rounded person, you know.
Exactly. I remember going back yonks when I was at school, being given the choice between typing. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Typing and
yes.
art. Yeah. And there was no way I was even capable of doing typing and achieving 100 words per minute, or any words per minute, actually. So I went for the art, and I've never regretted that decision.
Yeah.
But I'm sure people at Vectis Radio, who know I don't know all the knobs and bells and whistles, wish I had done typing, because I might be a bit better at it. But, yeah, I think it just sews everything together, doesn't it? It just gives you a really lovely, rounded... So all those core subjects, obviously, are key, those academic subjects.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I think the drama, as you were saying earlier, Helen, builds the confidence, and that all overflows into those other subjects, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's made a difference. I remember one of my... I don't think he won't mind me saying his name, because he's now a great friend of mine, but one of my students from Red Tie years ago, Andrew Butcher, who is now a published poet, and... earning money from his acting and all sorts of things. Now, Andrew came along to Red Tie, and I think I bullied him into it a little bit. I sort of was like, this kid needs to be here.
Yes.
And he came along to Red Tie, and a few years later, we were rehearsing for Romeo and Juliet. We were doing a very modern version of it, exciting version of it, and my house was just full of actors and stuff, and I just overheard a conversation between him and another actor friend, and the older actor friend said, if it wasn't for Helen, I wouldn't have come back to theatre because I'd lost my confidence. And I thought, that's nice. And then I remember Andrew saying, well, before Red Tie, I was the boy who ate my lunch in the library because I didn't have any friends, and now I've got friends, I'm confident, and it changed his life. And I just had a little tearful moment. I had to go off to the bathroom because I was like, but I always say, when sometimes I get bogged down with work and there's a lot going on, I have to think of those things. And I think if I do anything, if I can do that for just a couple of people, that is worthwhile. That is what I'm about. Sometimes I think, I've got deadlines to meet, I've got something to write before next week and I haven't done it, or those are the things that keep me going. That's what it's about.
So it sounds to me like those moments are almost, or perhaps more important to you than seeing somebody on stage doing a perfect Hamlet that you've taught. Edifying and clearly emotional moment, and a huge achievement for you.
It is for me, because the people I see around me that are unhappy aren't the people that haven't, made an A grade in maths or performed the best thing in the world. The people I see around me that are unhappy are people who are lonely and people who can't communicate with other people and, are suffering. So, that to me is really important.
That's brilliant. And do your children, have they followed in your footsteps?
No.
How did I know you were going to say that?
No. Well, I have five grown-up children and three grown-up stepchildren as well. And my stepdaughter Catherine used to do a lot of backstage work, and my stepdaughter Elizabeth is very artistic. She did a fine art degree. My own children have been into music more and stuff like that, but none of them have been particularly keen to act on stage. My youngest daughter did once. She was in a play at the Apollo when she was about 8, and she played a dormouse in A Toad of Toad Hall, I think. And there she was in this, and I picked her up the first night, and all the other little girls combing their hair and going, "Oh, mummy, it was lovely. I can't wait to do it again." My daughter got in the car and said, have I really got to do this for another 7 nights? And I thought, oh, you know, so never again. No, she hated every moment of it.
So are they musicians? Do they perform?
My eldest son's DJ. He does DJing and they listen and go to lots of music, but no, they're not particularly into the arts at all. They're all into very much into their sports and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah. So they've got slightly different genetic code coursing through their veins.
Yeah, we tend to miss a generation because it was my grandmother who got me into theatre. So, and my mum and dad don't do any of that. So, you know, it seems to have skipped a generation, I think, and maybe it's going to continue to do that.
What's been your favourite part?
What, of the whole red tie experience?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That'd be really difficult. I love performing. I really love playing a really good meaty role.
And what was your best role?
My favourite role. That's awkward. Because I think my favourite role I ever played was Claire Zachanasian in The Visit, which actually wasn't a red tie play. I did that for the Apollo. I think that was my favourite character I ever played. I had such a ball with that, and it was right out of my comfort zone as well, so I felt I learned a lot. But we've just done A Beautiful Thing, and I loved playing Sandra in that. I just loved playing that role.
What
as well.
Kind of character is Sandra?
Sandra is a bit of a rubbish mother, really, who's doing her best. Mm-hmm. And it's a love story about her son, who's gay and falls in love with the next door neighbour, basically. Mm. And it really is about that love story, and it's a beautiful play because it's not full of angst and anti-gay stuff. It is actually about the acceptance of a relationship that, you know, is a little bit sort of out of the blue for, okay, you know, the mother's not expecting, and she struggles a bit, but she
gets through in the end.
She's a good sort.
I love the scene at the end when the boys are dancing, yeah, in the film at the top of the flats, and she gets hold of one of the other girls.
And they start
dancing. So yeah, it's like it's not just on her son and partner. It becomes a whole community affair, and she's really gutsy from what I remember of her. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a lovely role to play. Yeah. We want to do that again. I think it changed. I don't know. We had Adam Richardson and Carl Birch played the two boys, and afterwards the both of them went up, we don't want it to end, we just want to do this all the time. It was just so, and Adam doesn't do an awful lot of acting, I mean Carl does, but Adam was just like, I just want to do this play, it's just so good, and so we're going to do it again. I think
I think those themes chime with things you're currently involved in, Donna.
Yes. I'm part of a group called Them Two, and my other partner is somebody called Joan Ellis that sat opposite me. And we performed last night in Southsea, gave them a little taster of our show, Navy Knickers and Nick TVs. And just a little plug, because we're going to do it as a fundraiser for Vectis for the new... What would we call it?
Well, it's helping Vectis go FM, isn't it? It's fundraising for the equipment they're going to need to go FM in the new year.
Yeah, and that's going to be in January.
That's so right, January the 26th.
It is, and we'd love people to come.
Riverside Centre, 7 p.m, and it's a fiver, and every penny goes to that Vectis appeal.
Yeah, and having retired, I took early retirement and moved on to the island, and I knew that I would have to do certain things. I couldn't just sit and watch TV, it would drive me mad. So I got involved in various projects, and the two that I'm really excited about at the moment are the Red Sand Project, which is about modern day slavery and sex trafficking, and the second one is called Trans 21, and that's a support group for families and young people under 21 years old who are questioning their gender.
Right.
Because on the island there are a lot of people that have changed gender or are going through the process of changing gender, and one of the parents that I've known for quite a while now, for 4 years, she had very little support when her daughter was trans to be a young man, and so it came as a result of that.
How does the group actually work, Don, if our listeners, somebody wants to get involved with it or like some help?
It's on Facebook. Okay. It's Trans 21. 21 the Isle of Wight, and we chat on Facebook. We've had one meeting so far, so it tells you how recent it is that we've organised this.
So people can be anonymous in a way.
They can be anonymous.
Talk to you.
Yes.
Talk to you on Facebook.
My phone number's on there as well. So anybody, and that did happen, anybody who does want to chat to me privately, that's absolutely fine. Absolutely.
Okay. But you also meet face-to-face, like you say, occasionally.
Yes.
For those people who want to get involved at
absolutely.
That level.
Who may want to come and actually get support from each other. And that was really noticeable at the first meeting, was and it was women, actually. It was an afternoon meeting, and they came along and ended up being, you know, really supported afterwards, and have carried on speaking to each other without our involvement, which I think is fantastic. That's
so
how it should be.
You're putting those people in contact with one another.
Yes, yeah. And I think the main thing as well is it's a community group. It's voluntary. I'm voluntary, and so what happens, it's organic. It's coming from the ground up, as opposed to it being a diktat from, you know, from the government.
Yes.
or from a specific council or whatever. And that's the beauty of it, is that we can actually send it in the direction that the members are saying they want.
Okay. So it's very much an emotional support group in a way.
And practical. Okay. Practical information about certain things to do with hormones and you know, doctors and specialists and passports and the things that you wouldn't think about,
of course,
in terms
yes.
of changing your gender on paperwork,
so
national insurance, sharing how that's done. I mean, we had somebody ask about where to get those really tight vests from, because her daughter would start to show breasts and she didn't want. She mm-hmm. really hated that idea. And where was the best place to get a very sort of tight top that she could wear for school and out and about. So yeah, lots of practical questions, as well as the general emotional support, because obviously some of the family members don't approve and make that very well known, and that's a stress in itself. You know, if you feel that you're getting rejected from your sisters and your aunts and your grandparents, that must be so difficult. And the other one I'm excited about is the Red Sand Project, and that was, people say to me, why is it called Red Sand? And it was set up by an artist in America called Molly Gotchman. And Molly went on a conference about modern day slavery and realised that actually the main place for sex trafficking in America was Houston, Texas, where young people and people were directed out across the rest of the country. And she went back and rang up an organisation and said, how can I help? And they said, raise awareness. So she did what she thought was right and ended up boring all her friends and her family to bits, talking about it constantly. And she felt, well, no, I need to think outside of the box, or get rid of the box completely, and came up with this vision of, on the sidewalks in America, vulnerable people falling down these sidewalks and the rest of us just stepping over them.
Yes.
So it's like they're there, but they're hidden in plain sight.
Not seen.
And she thought, well, how can I raise that? You know, and she suddenly came up with the idea of red sand, to put that in the cracks on the pavements anywhere across America. And it's really taken off, and it's in India as well, and we've now got it on the Isle of Wight.
Brilliant.
So I'm waiting for some funding, I hope, to be able to carry it on.
So again, it's taking that group of people that can perhaps feel very isolated with their experiences, and perhaps quite guilty and afraid.
Yes.
And saying, actually, you're not alone.
Yes.
There's other people that share that, and people that can support and help. So
absolutely.
Both those groups are very strong support networks.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
Brilliant. Okay, so we're going to have a very short break now, and then we're going to come back and hear more from Helen Redding, who is the founder and director of the Red Tie Theatre, and more from poet Donna Jones, MBE. So join us after the break. Thank you for listening.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666.
It's / Vectis Radio on Facebook, at Vectis Radio on Twitter. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Hello and welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my two special guests, theatre producer and director Helen Redding and poet Donna Jones, MBE. Welcome back, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. So I think, I'd like to talk a little bit more about Christmas, really. just to lighten the mood a little bit. What's your favourite bit about Christmas?
Oh,
because you're obviously into it with your Christmas jumper.
I love it all. I absolutely love every single. See, I'm still, you know, I keep getting distracted looking at the shiny lights on the tree. Shiny, I just go, you know. I love the whole thing. I love all the preparation. The problem I have is that as soon as Christmas Day is over, I'm going, oh, okay, what do I do now? But I love the whole, I love the present buying. I love absolutely everything.
Do you cook?
I do. My husband does most of the cooking at home because I think that's safer. But I bake a lot, so yes, I will do.
So have you done your cake yet? You're feeding it with brandy as we speak.
Mum makes my cake. Steve makes Christmas pudding, and then they swap over. So
oh, how lovely!
Yeah,
I want to come to your house.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, right. That's it.
Yeah, we're off. There. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because we're very sad, aren't we?
Yes.
Nobody
wants us.
No.
The two little things that Christmas forgot was up. Two little elves. No.
Well, Steve and I are running away this year. We're actually going to be on our own.
We're still coming, Helen.
Yeah,
we're still coming.
You can have my house. Yeah. I'll decorate it all for you.
I once went abroad at Christmas because everybody talks about, you know, go abroad, get away from the cold. And I went to Lanzarote and it was weird. It was absolutely weird because it was very hot. I mean, it was fabulous weather. And the hotels had all got Father Christmases in the windows and the Christmas trees. And it just somehow didn't work for me. You know, Christmas is cold. Christmas is being in the house snuggled up, you know.
Did you have turkey?
Yeah. I mean,
cold
some people,
turkey or hot turkey?
Hot turkey. I mean, they were putting on Christmas dinners and people were having them on the beach as well, you know. It was a really weird feeling. New Year was different. Yeah. That felt different.
But it's party,
Christmas is TV, isn't it? You know, you don't really go out on Christmas Day.
Christmas spirit, Donna, Christmas is TV.
Yeah, but you have all that, don't you? You have the TV, the chocolates, the dinner, the families, the games, the whatever it is that constitutes Christmas for you.
And you know it's Christmas morning when you wake up and breakfast is chocolate.
That's my dream.
That's what you had to have on Christmas morning.
Listen, I'm still a chocoholic. And 2 years ago, my friend bought me a advent calendar, you know, with the little chocolates in. And if chocolate's in my house, it's calling me. It says, eat me, eat me. And, I still have to eat chocolate. So I thought, I can't do this. So what I did was I got a pair of scissors and I turned the advent calendar round and I cut all the back off.
Right.
And I ate all the chocolates, but turned it back round to look as though I'd not touched them. It was that bad.
You're
that
just
bad.
Lying to yourself, Donna.
And when we were kids, I'm sure everybody's done this, where the Christmas chocolates are hanging off the tree, and you undo the. You're laughing, aren't you, Helen? You undo the paper that the chocolate's in, take it out, eat it, and then try and remould it into the bauble shape. Impossible.
We had it was such a childish thing to do, and we were all in our 40s and 50s when we did this. But my friend Kevin, who's no longer with us, sadly, but just for a trick on him, because he loved his food and loved his chocolates, he had a whole thing of Ferrero Rocher, and we emptied the whole lot out and wrapped sprouts in Ferrero Rocher wrappers back into the box, and we ate all his chocolate. And we couldn't stop laughing. It was such a childish thing to do, but we couldn't stop laughing while we were doing it. He was very angry, but it was
rightly
fun.
So.
It was worth doing. It was worth doing.
Rightly so.
I would do it again.
That sounds. But I've heard of.
I've gone right off you, Helen.
I've heard of sprouts being covered in chocolate.
Yes.
Oh no.
No, I mean that it's like peanuts for me covered in chocolate. It's
it's
not accepted. It's wrong. It's
on
wrong.
Every level.
Yeah. Have you ever eaten a full?
What, Donna?
Chocolate. You know, for Christmas that you get the Christmas stocking.
What, the layer?
The whole thing. When you get a Kit Kat, you might get a Mars bar. You can get a
like
Twix.
The selection box.
I'm losing it. I'm too excited now about Christmas. Have you ever eaten the whole lot in one go?
You know me well enough. You know I have.
Yes.
You know that will have happened.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I've done the same.
But what we found, I've inherited my mother's Christmas decorations from the 50s, from the 60s, and they're beautiful. But I mean, I shouldn't really be left in charge of them because they're gorgeous. But there was one box, it was a bit whiffy, and right in the centre was an umbrella wrapped in red and gold foil. It was absolutely beautiful, and I can remember buying it from my mother from Harrods years ago when I used to work up in Knightsbridge, and it's just exquisite, but she'd not wanted to eat it because I bought it for her, and she'd hung it on the tree every year, but it was perfectly preserved, but it had that stale, nearly 30 whatever years old, over 30 years old, and I said to Doug, my husband, you know, we've got to let it go, so I had to go in the bin, but it broke my heart.
Did you take a photograph of it?
Oh no, I'll get him to get it out of the bin.
Yeah, good idea. Give Dougie a job to do.
Nice job, something.
Yeah, Dougie.
Dougie, if you're listening, get those rubber gloves on, love. That's your lot tonight, Friday evening. Woohoo!
But I don't know about you, but like Christmas chocolates for me are after 8 mints and matchsticks, orange.
Can you still get matchsticks?
Yeah, I think you can.
Definitely get the orange ones because I've had some.
Yeah, but it's like Warnings Avocat, isn't it, as well? That's Christmas. And the red cherries. Snowballs.
Baileys.
And cherry.
Oh, no, not for me.
Do you know, I only ever have sherry at Christmas, and it's so nice.
Ginger wine?
No, I don't know, I'm not keen.
Mulled wine?
Mulled wine.
I like mulled wine.
Me too.
Yes.
I like the way that's had a resurgence.
Yes.
And we used to get our turkey from a farm, and while you were waiting in the queue, it didn't matter how long you waited because they just kept topping up your mulled wine and your Quality Street. So it was lovely.
That's the way.
Yeah.
But Mum had one of those Globes drinks cabinets. Yeah, you know the ones, right? But the only thing that was in it was the Warnings Avocat. And that was for Christmas to make a snowball, and that was the treat.
Oh, that's right. And then it kind of, because it's got that egg yolk in it, it goes slightly off, doesn't it? It goes all crusty around the top of the lid.
Yes, it does. Yes, yeah, absolutely. But there was never any cherries left by the time it came to have the snowballs, because we'd eaten them.
Those maraschino ones, those bright red things.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
They're like plastic, aren't they? But they are gorgeous.
Yes, me and my two brothers, that was it.
Used to put them in the baby sham.
Yes.
Oh.
See, baby sham again is a Christmas image.
Nice.
When we think of Christmas, baby sham, Warnings Avocat, orange matchsticks.
It was my drink of choice when I was 17.
We've all got those, haven't we?
But you see, I'm going to make a confession now. When I was about 12, maybe even younger, when my mum went to work, I'm making her sound like a bad mum, and she wasn't, it was me. I was wrong. I knew I shouldn't have done it, but I used to go into the cupboard where she kept the drinks. I used to have a little nip of sherry, or a nip of apricot brandy, and a nip of plum brandy.
Oh, apricot brandy. Yeah. Oh, those drinks. Oh, no.
I know.
Yes.
But it wasn't really brandy, it was like a fortified wine, wasn't it?
Yes.
So it was very sweet and sugary and syrupy. But I'd be necking this back. I'd have lovely afternoons. Breeze.
But the other one, was I just going to say, Schlauer. The other one for me was Schlauer at the table on Christmas Day. Yeah. You know, was it grape and pear or some apple Schlauer, something like. And it was like for us that we weren't old enough to drink the alcohol. That was our drink of choice at Christmas.
I know. Oh, it's lovely. Just happy simple kind of happy memories, aren't they? They're just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. My poor mum, she used to leave everything to the last minute because she used to she said it made the excitement greater for her.
Yes.
But my stress levels were through the roof because I think, you know, are we getting the tree up? It would be like the 24th of December, you know. Is it? Yes, she said, I'm going to do it. And she used to love to rush round the shops, and she didn't have a penny, but just absorb the atmosphere.
Yeah, I love that on Christmas Eve. Yeah. That's what I do on Christmas Eve. I'll go into town. Hopefully I'll have done all the shopping. Mm. And I absorb people coming out of work and the parties that are taking place and go and have lunch somewhere. And that actually is my favourite day, Christmas Eve.
I agree.
And then the trouble is, though, you do that and, like you say, you've bought everything that there is to buy, but the sales have started, haven't they, in some of the shops. So you're there buying the purple tinsel that you never use, you don't want, but you think there it is and it's half price, haven't it?
Absolutely. But do you know what? I used to work on an estate in Sheffield, and as soon as bonfire night had finished, the Christmas decorations were up. So that was November the 6th.
Okay.
Well, I think that's this year we did go. We everywhere I noticed it was very, very early.
Yeah.
I went up to London at the end of last month, and everywhere, Mayfair, you know, they were all awash. It was, I think,
people's homes.
No, the big stores and the hairdressing salons. Everywhere had trees. Everywhere had big garish fir and all the lights in the streets. I mean, beautiful. More Christmas trees, in the gardens and everywhere than I've ever seen. Stunning, but so early. And I think it's because we are all so fed up this year.
I thought I was going to say. I think that is because 2016 has been quite a
rough year.
It seems to be a rough year for everybody, even personally for people.
Indeed.
Not just nationally and internationally. Yeah. I think
it's been a lot
of personal issues.
It's hard to think of something. I'm really struggling. I'm sure there must be something really uplifting when my grandson was born. On a more global level, that's happened that has been wonderful.
Tim, the astronaut.
Yes, there was that.
Yes, there was that.
Superb in the end, wasn't it? But I think mostly it's been quite. People have felt quite down about.
Mm. Well, we've lost a lot of icons, haven't we?
Iconic people as well, yeah. And
it hasn't been. So I think there's going to be one almighty party, don't you, on December the 31st. I think we're all going to be shoving that year out the back door.
I think that's why people this year, like you say, are getting ready earlier and actually going, want this year to hurry up and go.
Yes.
And I'm going to be a grandmother in 2017.
Oh, congratulations.
I'm expecting my first grandchild. I'm so excited.
Do you know what she'll
be? Yes, boy.
Names?
Wow.
They're not allowing names because apparently they said they mentioned a name they quite liked to my ex-husband, Phil's dad, who went, that's a horrible name. So, he's always been honest. And I think this put them off telling anybody their ideas. So
and it has to be their choice, doesn't it?
Of course, yeah.
Nobody else. It's down to them.
They'll be very excited.
And then that baby will become, they will grow into whatever name they've been given, won't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Then you can't imagine them being called anything else.
No, exactly.
Mm. Names are funny, aren't they? Because, I mean, again, the olden names, what we would class as older names, are definitely back. Alfie.
Alfie, yeah,
Archie,
my little Archie,
yeah, all those.
Lots of Alfies, yes, and Archies in school.
Yeah, they're coming through. They're coming through. I can't. Can you imagine a child being named Arnold?
Arnie.
Arnold. And there are certain names that you just think I can't ever imagine a baby being called that.
But then I couldn't imagine names like Harry coming back. Those, you know,
the classical,
real old. When I was a girl, like your granddad's here.
And George, George's back in, and Arthur's back in.
That's right. They do.
And names like that. I think they've drawn the line at Keith and Wayne. I love the 70s names.
Yes, Shirley. Yeah, names
and things. But the girls' names are.
Well, Poppy was very popular at one time. Yeah. Emma and Emily. And
my youngest daughter's called Amelia, but she's 25, nearly 26, and there wasn't anyone called Amelia. And then in the last 10 years, it's been the most popular girl's name every year. So I don't think I was ahead of my time with that one.
Yes. Yes.
My nephew's called Wayne, and then his mum didn't realise, and she gave him the middle name of John.
John Wayne, Wayne John.
So she never realised years before she kind of went, oh, would you look at that?
Well, some of the young women that I worked with were having children that were mixed race, African Caribbean. And so they would take some of the names that are, you know, Shazne and some of the famous singers at the moment and alter the spellings or join two pieces of name to get together to make a completely new name, and it was like, oh my gosh, I can't keep up with this, you know, because they were so different, these names. They weren't taking your traditional names, you know. And obviously the Kardashians and people like that were influencing names all the time, and the rap singers and what have you, but they were being very creative with the names for their children.
I worked, my art director back in the, back in the 80s, he was one of the first people I knew to have children, you know, my generation. And he had a little girl called what was she called? Chantel, which is now a really popular name, isn't it?
Yes.
And the second one was Misty Bell, which now it wouldn't be, nobody would turn a hair. But then it was Chantel and Misty Bell, you know, just these beautiful, exotic names. Where did they come from? You know, we were all calling people Carol and Sarah and really.
Well, it's the same with your experience, Helen. I was the first Donna in Barnsley. Okay, that's my claim to fame. And my mum got that from Donna Reed, the actress. And then years later, I'd be walking around town and somebody shout, Donna! Like, you know, in this kind of tone of voice, and I think, oh my god, what? And it's actually the mum's there with the little girl called Donna, and that was strange, that was weird, because for years again, I was the only one that I knew of.
One of my actresses works for me quite a lot, Imogen Evans, amazing, she's mixed race, so she had to renew her passport and everything went wrong, and she's having an argument with her mum on the phone, and it just made me laugh thinking about names, because she's called Imogen, obviously, but her middle name is a Nigerian name because her dad's Nigerian, and her mum had spelt her name wrong when filling it in on the form, and this conversation was hilarious. How could you forget how to spell your daughter's middle name? And then when she told me what it was, I can't even remember how to pronounce it, never mind, but it was absolutely brilliant.
I've got a story with some of the young men that we were working with that didn't have bank accounts, and so we supported them to open up a bank account, which meant that they needed a passport. So we got all the forms for the passports, and time after time after time we were filling these passport forms in, because there were mistakes being made all the time. Anyway, this young man, Keith, and we thought, right, we've cracked it with Keith. We've finally filled it in, and we'd left him to fill in his signature well, what can he do wrong there, yeah? Came back, the doll gone, the doll left the room, came back, and do you know what he'd done? For his signature, he'd done his street tag, his graffiti tag, as his signature.
Right.
It was like, what? After everything else he'd done wrong, we thought he's going to get his signature right. Yeah. No, brilliant. Street tag. Well, start again.
Well done, that man. Thanks very much for that. So, back to Christmas, because I just love it. What's your favourite Christmas present you've ever had? Go on, what's yours, Donna?
My aunt bought me a pyjama case.
Oh, pyjama case.
It was in the shape of a lady, you know, and it was absolutely wonderful. But my mum was very naughty, because my relations would come one evening and then they'd make this big fuss about getting all the presents out of the back of the car. And they'd go upstairs and then my dad would go out, you know, he'd go down to the working men's or something like that. And then my mum would say, come on, let's go and have a look. Let's have a look. And I'd be about 11, yeah? And I always remember opening this box and it was like a shell, a pearl shell pen. And it was blue.
Oh.
And it was so exciting. Yes. But obviously on Christmas Day, I had to make a big fuss as though I'd not seen it. And obviously the music box as well, which I've still got.
How old were you when you got the music box?
Again, about 11. So it's over... Yes, 50.
And does it still work?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Does it play Christmas music?
It does. And no, wait a minute, it plays the waltz, the Blue Danube.
Oh,
yeah,
I love
fantastic.
It. So will that be coming out at Pride of Place this year?
It's up in the attic at the moment because I've just moved, so I've got to get up there and sort out
you have, definitely.
What I've
You're
got.
Behind, Donna.
Well, that's me all over, isn't it?
And you, Helen, you got a favourite
one? My favourite present I ever had as a child was a doll's house that my dad actually made me.
Oh, special.
Because when we were growing up, we didn't have much money at all. And... You know, doll's houses, expensive things. And my dad isn't that, you know, a handyman by any means, you know, he's quite intellectual, but he's not, you know, it wasn't a very practical guy. And he must have taken him, months to do that. It was so beautiful as well, so beautifully done. But as an adult, my favourite present is always when my children club together and they get me a token for Zen to go and have a massage. That is
wow.
When I love that. Yes, because it's just like treat, just complete treat for me. And it's, love it. And they do that a lot.
Well, mine is my brother always goes and buys me a new set of paintbrushes. And possibly some canvas.
Now, you don't mean paintbrushes to do the living room?
Oh, gosh, no. No. Actual art paintbrushes. And if I get a tin of crayons, the pencils, mm-hmm. I still get as excited as I did when I was a young one, when we used to get the tin of crayons and the colouring book. That, you know, lovely. That was always part and parcel of Christmas. Yes. Just to open that tin and see that range of colours going across, because one on its own hasn't got that effect, but when you're starting with the yellow, the orange in the reds,
beautiful.
And you're going through the colours and you just see them, I still get excited about that.
My mum... bought some Derwent. I don't know if you're familiar with that brand, and they had the Lego Derwent Lego on the front, and you lifted the top off, and there was, like you say, this beautiful rainbow of range of coloured pencils, and they were my pride and joy. And I knew she'd worked really hard to get them as a nurse and didn't have a lot of money, but I'd been coveting them in the art shop window. So there they were on Christmas morning. I was thrilled with them, and I took them to school, which she wasn't that keen on, but otherwise wouldn't have used them. And you couldn't sharpen them, you could only sharpen them with a knife, a pen knife or something. They were very sharp knives. My granddad, that job fell to my grandfather, and anyway, this particular one I overused at school, and I lent them to Deborah B, if you're listening, and she used a pencil sharpener on them, and it was meant to break the lead.
Yes.
So it didn't matter that the pencil, that she broke the lead. It wasn't that. It was the fact that my mum had worked so hard to get these pencils. And, you know, I was so frightened to take this pencil home. And I thought, my poor mum, you know, she worked so hard. And now, Deborah B, you've gone and ruined them. And I got very upset. And I can remember the nuns at the convent school then getting extremely upset with me and saying it wasn't about material things. and that was, you know, extremely naughty. But I suppose, like I say, it wasn't it wasn't the fact the pencil was ruined. I thought, my poor mum.
Yes.
It doesn't come about a material thing, does it? I mean, it sounds like it is, but, you know, when someone's worked that hard to do something for you, it becomes very precious, doesn't
it? That's right.
And it's that hurting somebody, isn't it?
Yes.
You've hurt them, don't you?
Yes, and Deborah B. just thought it was hilarious. But Deborah B., they were very wealthy. They were one of the first people, the first people I ever knew to go on an aeroplane, and they flew to Malta. And that was, I mean, now, anybody younger than, you know, 20, wouldn't understand what it's like not to fly.
I think she owes you a set of pencils, personally.
But Joni, wasn't there a storied school where you did go abroad? Didn't you go to Africa or somewhere?
No, Danny, you know I didn't. You know it was a big lie.
Well, tell, come on, Christmas confession.
Well, I just wanted to... No, this was Sophie. She'd bigged us up to my mum.
That's it.
Yeah, she had a friend, her friend Tate, who came from West India, and Tate had been away with her aunt and her mum, and, you know, gorgeous beach holiday. And Sophie had been babysat by my mum, and when I went round to see, you know, pick mum up, she said, to pick Sophie up, she said, oh... I hear you've been away. And I said, well, no, clearly not. You know, white, pale skin. No, haven't been anywhere. Well, Sophie said you'd been to a 5-star hotel and a sauna and massage. I said, no. She said, flown to the Bahamas. Didn't even send me a postcard. I said, no. Well, Sophie told me you did. And that was the end of it. As far as my mother was concerned, if Sophie had said it, that
she
was the truth.
Lie. Yeah.
And she was only 6. I thought, you could see her. Look at her smirking. Sophie, if you're listening, which of course you're not, are you? So I'm safe to say what I like.
And another thing.
Yeah, and another thing.
Yeah, that's mum's for you.
Yeah.
So are you doing cards this year? Because they're a bit of a thing of the past in some...
I'm not into cards, to be honest, but I didn't send my aunt and uncle one last year and they were very upset about it.
Certain generation, I think, they still want their
expect,
cards,
and
they?
I've just posted it on my way here today.
And
nobody
much,
else's.
How much are stamps now?
I don't know, because I've had these stamps for a long time. They're about, are they 60-something pence or 70
really,
pence? They're so expensive.
Because I didn't realise that you can bulk buy stamps at first class. You know, you could bulk them 5 years ago and still use them now.
Yeah.
You haven't got to pay the
extra.
You don't? Oh,
no, I didn't
good.
Understand that.
Because
everybody
does it on Facebook now, don't they? We send Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's still some people that like a card.
A card. Well, yeah, because some people keep them year after year and bring the same cards out.
And also, some, do you know what some people do?
No, go on,
they
give us the gossip.
They get all their cards down at the end after Christmas and they write down who sent them a card and they go on their Christmas list next year, but nobody else does.
Oh.
I know people who
do
that.
No, Helen, that's not a little confession, is it?
No, I don't do that. I don't care.
No. No.
If I didn't have enough cards, I'd just buy some and put them up.
Yeah.
It's a... No, I heard of somebody. She will remain nameless because she may well be listening, but I can't say who it was.
Oh, wow.
I thought that was a bit extreme.
Not Christmassy, is it?
It's
not the Christmas spirit.
They're off my Christmas
Yes,
houses,
yes. Yeah. But when we were younger, I mean, the mistletoe was a biggie, wasn't it?
Oh, God.
It was your... You know, it was your chance to get, a
your only chance, often.
With somebody that you've been fancying for 12 months, you know.
They must have just been petrified. There was us like, couldn't wait. And they're like, oh, no.
And your Christmas party when you was 15 at your friend's house. Yeah. Postman's knock, couldn't wait.
Fantastic.
Couldn't wait.
My friend and I used to sort of slope round the greengrocers. And, they'd had the massive bunches of mistletoe. Take the little twig of 2 leaves, as long as it had the berry, that it was valid.
Yes, it had to have the berry.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we didn't have to have a big bunch. So we'd nick that little, pick that bit off, and then run round the pubs on Christmas Eve, and like you say, snog that boy you had your eye on for the past 12 months.
Yes.
And hopefully he'd be so drunk, he'd just go along with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just be nice. Yeah. Just be kind.
There was a boy at my
it was
school.
His act of charity for the festive season.
At my school, I remember, and he was very, very funny. He was a bit nerdy, but he knew he was and didn't mind. But he said, just so that no opportunity was wasted, he fashioned some wire into like a helmet with some mistletoe dangling over the front of it. So he had it on at school. For the whole 3-week built up to Christmas. He said, just in case. Like, I don't think anyone, they were just like, no, go away. He was like, poor kid. But he took it all in stride. But I just remember him calling it his something.
Lucky hat or something.
But, I remember that.
Yes.
And those
yes.
slow dances at Christmas.
Did your mum used to make you a Christmas hat for school?
No.
Oh, you see, my mum did out of the toilet rolls.
Go on.
And tissue paper.
What did it look like?
But it was fabulous because she was very creative. But you're not allowed to do that now.
Why not?
Toilet rolls are used by other people.
Oh,
so it's a health and safety issue.
Goodness.
That's rubbish,
that's sad, isn't it? So was there a lot of crepe paper involved?
Oh, masses.
What was your favourite one? What did it look like? Very quickly.
Bright red. Bit like one of the ones that the three wise men would wear. Really? Yeah, absolutely. Phenomenal.
Now I've got that image in my head. I can't get it out.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to put the other image in, which is my little dog Pip as baby Jesus, which you saw last night.
I did.
With his head wrapped in a tea towel to look like baby Jesus.
Yeah, a whiskery baby Jesus.
A whiskery. But it really takes to the role, doesn't
he? Oh, he did.
He did.
He embraced it.
Yes.
Helen,
yes.
I feel, you know, perhaps that's the new one for your next production.
I tend not to do Christmas productions with Red Tie because there's so many going on and lots of pantos and everybody's involved in other things. But today, actually, at Priory School, they were practising for their nativity play.
Yes.
Juniors were practising as we left today and were singing.
Lovely.
And there's just something about it. I'm not a Christian, I'm an atheist, but I absolutely love the whole thing. You know, it's really, really, really nice.
Lovely. Well, that's a lovely image to end on, and you've both got to come back because there was so much we didn't get to talk about, so hopefully you'll come back and see us in the new year.
I'm sure we will.
So thank you very much, Donna Jones MPE, and thank you very much, Helen Redding. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you both. Merry Christmas to you too.
You too.
And please join me next week when I'll be talking to Dancer and Amy. Look forward to being with you again then. Have a lovely weekend. Take care now. Bye bye.
www.vectisradio.com